Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this last day of March, Monday, March the 31st, and it's time for All Things Political. Kathleen Dunn, under the weather today, so I'm stepping in to talk with you about All Things Political. I'm very happy to also have Andy Borowitz, online columnist and author of The Republican Playbook, here with us to talk with you about all that's been happening in the wild world of politics over the past week or so. I certainly know that one of the things on the minds of many of you is the state of the Democratic race for the nomination for president. On Friday, we heard some high-profile Democrats stepping up and saying Hillary Clinton should withdraw from the race. Polls also out asking Democrats, should Hillary Clinton withdraw from the race? Should Barack Obama withdraw from the race? Or should we let the primary season continue as scheduled? Maybe that's a question for you to answer. 1-800-642-1234. A different number since we're broadcasting from Madison today. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Let me welcome now Andy Borowitz, author of The Republican Playbook, online columnist. You can check out his website, borowitzreport.com. Also winner of the first ever National Press Club Award for Humor. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much for being with us. And sorry, Kathleen can't be here today. I know that you are one of her favorite guests.
It sounds like Kathleen has withdrawn from the race.
Yeah, maybe she has.
What do we know what exactly? I mean, I've had a lot of women not show up to things that I've been invited to in the past. But this is the first time it's happened in such a public way.
She says it's the flu, but we don't know. But
That's the quote-unquote flu. I've heard that one before.
Well, we wish Kathleen well. We hope that she's feels better soon. But what about all these this fighting that's going on the Democratic side of the ticket here, and people calling for, including Chris Dodd, I think on Friday, saying Hillary Clinton ought to just quit.
Well, you know, I am really well informed in all these political matters because I watch The Situation Room on CNN.
With Wolf, uh-huh.
And, you know, in The Situation Room, you learn so much more than you do watching any other show, because other shows might have, like, one TV monitor on their set, and The Situation Room has around 18. So it's like...
they have to know more.
It's like a Best Buy showroom, mm-hmm. and they just have all these TVs. And so I know so much. I know all about this business about everybody wanting everyone to withdraw from the race. You know, it's interesting. 20% of Democrats, I think, want Hillary to get out, mm-hmm. something like that. I read another poll that I think is really interesting, which is that 100% of Republicans want her to stay in the race. So I really think that she's got to, you know, with that kind of support, I don't see how she can back out now. She'd be letting down her most fervent supporters.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, is this hurting Democrats, do you think? Do you think this is John McCain is just, rubbing his hands in glee right now?
I don't know if you can use the words John McCain and glee in the same sentence. I think that's a first that you've just done there. I mean, anything's possible. I think that this is obviously bad for the Democrats. But the one reassuring thing that all Democrats can sort of bank on or cling to is that Howard Dean is in charge of the party. So everything's going to be fine. I mean, we've got a very firm hand on the rudder.
You're not convinced when he says we'll have this thing settled by July?
I just think that, you know, when Howard Dean reassures us, that causes widespread panic. I just think that's generally the next thing that's going to happen. It's the Democrats, have a way of kicking away a sure thing. It's sort of amazing. I mean, look at the political landscape right now. You've got an incredibly unpopular Republican incumbent. I think, I mean, I know I keep on quoting these poll numbers, but George Bush's approval rating is something like 26% right now. Just to put that in some perspective for our public radio listeners, he is now less popular than bird flu, which means for the first time, the American people have more confidence in the job that bird flu is doing as a pandemic than he is doing as president. So you've got an extremely unpopular president. You've got a very, very unpopular war, which, you know, we've been hearing, you know, that the surge has been working for the last 12 months, more or less. And, you know, it really depends on who you are. If you're, you know, if you've just been blown up in the green zone, I don't know if you feel that the surge is working that well. I think the main thing that the surge has been doing is the surge hasn't been covered by the American media. I mean, I think the main thing that's been working in the surge's favor is that we've had things like Anna Nicole Smith passing away, which has gotten most of Wolf Blitzer's 18 screens on the Situation Room occupied. Meanwhile, the surge is not working. I'm here in Wisconsin today to deliver that news. I think the insurge is working. That seems to be working well, but the surge doesn't seem to be doing all that well. So you've got a very unpopular war. You've got home foreclosures, people losing their homes, while, you know, Bear Stearns is being bailed out by the Federal Reserve. So generally speaking, historically, when you've got an unpopular war, unpopular president, and most importantly in presidential elections, pocketbook issues that are weighing against the incumbent party, you would think the Democrats could nominate just about anybody. Yeah. You know, at this point, they could nominate Kevin Federline and get elected. And actually, I want to propose that that might break the logjam. I mean, Kevin Federline may have less baggage at this point. And I think he's probably up at 3 a.m. and could answer that phone. So he might be a good choice. But I think that I think the Democrats have an amazing ability to look a sure thing in the eye and then find a way to screw it up. I think there's a famous line from, you know, the late, great Will Rogers when somebody asked him what his party affiliation was, and he said, well, I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. And I think that, that he said that about 100 years ago, and I think it still applies.
Let me ask you, Andy, to listen to this and see if you have any explanation for this.
You know, I made a mistake in describing it. I have said many times, I have talked about this many times, that we were, you know, very much told by the Secret Service and the military that we were going into a war zone. Obviously, come on. I say millions of words every week, and there's a lot more, room for error when you're talking as much as I'm talking.
That was Hillary Clinton explaining that she misspoke when she said that she was under fire when taking a trip to Bosnia as First Lady, when the video emerged showing her greeting people at the airport and no such ducking and running for cover. What's with Hillary's memory, you think?
Well, you know, we all remember that event differently. I mean, I was on the plane with her, and it was three across. It was me, Hillary, and Sinbad, the comedian.
Sinbad was on that trip.
That's right. We were all there, and Sinbad, I've got to say, was cracking us up. He was hilarious. At least that's my memory of it. Other people may say that Sinbad was terribly unfunny, but I don't remember it that way. I remember that he was just in rare form. We got off the plane, and there was, in fact, this adorable little 8-year-old Bosnian girl with sort of a braid down her neck, and I remember her very clearly. The reason I do is because she presented the First Lady, the then First Lady, with a bouquet, and I remember there was something I didn't like about this little girl, something that just didn't ring true, and I remember saying to Hillary, I said, Mrs. Clinton, duck, and then I wrestled that little girl to the ground, and I realized that she was not a little girl at all. She was a midget special ops sniper. And she had a gun, an automatic weapon, hidden under that bouquet of flowers. And, I mean, we came this close to really being under serious fire. So it's true, we didn't actually duck, and there was no actual sniper fire. So she has misremembered that part of the story.
I guess so. And the video didn't catch that either.
I will never forget. I was staring death right in the eye, and the eye was that so-called little girl's eyes. It was terrifying. I remember even Sinbad, who's a big man and I think physically courageous in many ways, I've never seen him so terrified.
On the side of Barack Obama, he appeared on Thursday or Friday on The View and talked about his campaign. And one of the things that he said that's getting quite a bit of attention on the cable news channels is that if his former pastor, now retired pastor, Wright, were still the pastor of the church in Chicago, that maybe now he would not attend the church.
Well, yeah, now that those clips are on YouTube, I think he neglected to add that. Yeah, that's been an unfortunate, I've been sort of marveling at how well the Obama campaign has been run. You know, it's been run so well, I started getting suspicious that Obama was not a Democrat, because it seemed to be so professionally run.
Yeah.
But so the whole Reverend Wright incident was actually kind of reassuring to me that he is actually a Democrat and capable of amazing screw-ups. I think there's several reasons why I would have gotten out of that church at some point, long before Mr. Obama would have. I think a lot of the speeches that guy gave, Reverend Wright, were certainly hateful, but I think more troubling, really, were some of the vests that he wore. I thought that the vests were really hideous, I guess would be the word I would use. And I just would wonder about the judgment of anyone who would leave his home wearing one of those vests. I just wouldn't want somebody like that on my steering committee. So, I think this Reverend Wright thing hasn't been great. And the one thing that I'm really concerned about is that he doesn't remember any of the things that Reverend Wright said. He doesn't remember ever hearing any of those speeches. Hillary does not remember any of these things, about Bosnia. And John McCain doesn't remember that Al-Qaeda is not being... I'm just concerned about this sort of epidemic of memory loss among presidential candidates. I think, are they not getting enough of certain proteins, possibly? Should they be eating more fish?
Yeah.
I just think that science needs to examine this memory loss issue, because John McCain, when he starts talking about the Shiites and Al-Qaeda and the Sunnis, he reminds me of like a guy who's having a hard time remembering the names of his grandchildren. He just seems very, very, very lost. Like, yeah, the one with the red hair. What's his name? Rusty? Danny?
Red. Yeah, okay.
And, I mean, if you need to have, basically Joe Lieberman as your lifeline on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That's kind of troubling.
We're going to ponder that as we take this short pause and ask you to join in with your observations from the news of the past week or so. It's all things political. I'm Joy Cardine in for Kathleen Dunn today, talking with Andy Borowitz, who is an online columnist, author of The Republican Playbook, winner of the first ever National Press Club Award for Humor. He's giving us a humorous take on politics at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine in for Kathleen Dunn, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up later today, it's Talk of the Nation after 1, a look at the latest from Iraq. That's coming up after 1 o'clock this afternoon. Right now, talking with Andy Borowitz, who is an online columnist, theboritzreport.com, talking about all things political. including the current situation in the Democratic Party and in the race for the Democratic nomination for president. A number of people in this past week on Friday, high-profile Democrats, asking Hillary Clinton to quit. Former President Bill Clinton had this to say about all the talk about his wife quitting the race.
I've already had four people come up to me and say, tell her not to quit. And I want to tell you something. My family's not big on quitting. You probably noticed that.
And I see on your website, Andy, that you're reporting that Hillary vows to stay in the race for another 100 years?
That's right. She is. She answered this in a town hall meeting. They said, when would she, you know, announce an exit strategy from the race? And she said, I'm going to stay another 50 years, maybe 100 years, maybe a million years. So she is really, I would say, drawing a line in the sand. She thinks it would send the wrong message to the enemy if we announced some kind of timetable now for her to get out of the race. So I think she's in for the long haul. I love that. I hadn't exactly heard the whole clip that you played. I'd heard the thing that Bill Clinton said about how we're not quitters.
Mm-hmm.
That's also he's quoting Richard Nixon. I hope he's aware of that. That was actually a Nixon quote, so he's in fine company. But that thing, politicians are doing this thing now where they're sort of quoting a lot of highly unattributed sources. Like he said, I've had four people come
That's
up
right.
to me today. I mean, you know, that's an incredibly great thing. I want to use that more often, like when I come home, you know, and I'm late, I'm 2 hours late, and my wife says, where were you? And I'm just going to say, well, I had to talk to five or six people on my way home. Don't worry, dear. I mean, it's just there's no, it's very hard to check when you say four people. And Hillary, and they all do it. I mean, I don't mean to just bash the Clintons, but Hillary has a habit of saying, I was in a small town the other day, and I was talking to a housewife who is having trouble with her family and making ends meet, and she said, can you fight for us? And I'm in this fight for her. And I'm like, hearing this, okay, which town?
Yeah.
Who was the lady? What were the problems? This is all sounding very vague to me. I mean, this wouldn't pass muster on Law and Order, I don't think.
Let's take some calls. Jim and Toma. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I was just thinking that it's really kind of too bad that the race is still so close between Obama and Clinton. I don't agree with the calls to have Clinton drop out of the race, because I think she still could conceivably become the nominee, and we're really not going to know this time around until the convention. It's going to be the first time in quite a while that the convention is going to be where the nomination is decided, in my opinion, which is too bad, because it gives John McCain this wonderful gift on a silver platter, because since the Republican contest is over, he gets to go all over the place looking presidential. He just got finished with this big overseas tour, and I think today is the day that he's going to announce, or already has announced, his general election campaign and a whole bunch of new proposals coming out. So he gets to look presidential while the Democrats are still trying to decide who their nominee is going to be.
Yep, and that's right, Andy?
I agree with everything he said. It was a really good call. I agree with everything he said except for the first part, which is that Hillary should stay in because she could conceivably win the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are only two scenarios through which she could win the nomination. This is me taking a rare moment of seriousness.
Okay.
I have to have a disclaimer. The following comment you're hearing is not a joke.
It's something you heard on The Situation Room.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, the first way that she could win is if something really catastrophic happened to, you know, Barack Obama. You know, if it turns out, you know, that Barack Obama was a member of, you know, that club that Elliot Spitzer joined, that very exclusive Emperor's VIP club. But, you know, Barack Obama, we don't have to, if there's ever a guy that we don't have to worry about being in a sex scandal, it's Barack Obama, because Michelle Obama would kill him. I mean, if I think if Bill Clinton had been married to Michelle Obama, he would never have been impeached. There would not have been an intern in a 50-mile radius of Bill Clinton if Michelle had been in charge. Anyway, that I guess was kind of a joke. So that's part one would be something Obama would have to implode. And let's face it, that's not going to happen because Obama has run a very, very disciplined campaign. And he's also, you know, the only real scandal about Obama that I really have noticed was the New York Times did a front page piece a couple months ago saying Obama's drug use in high school may not have been as much as he's portrayed it to be. So he had overstated his drug use. That they said friends reminded, you know, who read about Obama saying that he had smoked a little pot in high school said, Barry was never smoking pot. So far, he's only had sort of reverse scandals in that he's actually more of a square and straight than he's portrayed himself to be. He weathered the Reverend Wright thing extremely well. His numbers are actually now better than they were nationally than they were before the Reverend Wright thing. So that's not going to destroy him. So the only other scenario, I said there were two scenarios. Mm-hmm. The only other scenario, which the Clintons seem to be banking on, is that, as Jim said, it's going to go all the way to the convention, at which they're going to somehow convince the superdelegates to overturn the votes of the pledge delegates. In other words, to sort of just nullify the results of this long, torturous democratic process. And so what you're basically saying is the only way Hillary can get to be presidential nominee is if somehow the party insiders go and take away the nomination from Barack Obama. And that is, as everybody would say, it's technically possible. There's probably a 5% chance that could happen. But if that happened, it would not only mean that Hillary would go down in defeat, it would be such a historic alienation of a lot of voters who have traditionally been Democratic voters that the party would probably take, I would say, several election cycles to recover from that, if ever. So I don't think the superdelegates are going to do that. And actually, the evidence, my wife pointed out to me this morning, that there's 7 new superdelegates as of today have gone over to the Obama side. So all the movement in terms of the party elders, the people that are supposed to decide this thing or fix this thing for Hillary, all the evidence is that they're moving away from Hillary. Mm-hmm. So at some point, Bill and Hillary maybe need to sort of get over this sort of scorched earth philosophy that this is worth winning at all costs and recognize they're not going to win, and all they're going to do at this point, I think they are now in the position of damaging Hillary's Senate career. Yeah. I think that, you know, I'm from New York, and I could see if she really turns this into kind of a bloodbath of the convention just because she wants to or she can. She's not going to win the nomination, and I think she could suffer a primary challenge in New York the next time around. So I think they've got to at some point get off this we don't quit rhetoric and actually start getting pragmatic about her future, because Bill's political career is, you know, it's run its course, and now it's all about Hillary. But I think her best-case scenario now is to be a successful, well-respected, powerful senator from one of the biggest states in the country. That's not a bad consolation prize.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about a story that was getting some talk, I think, in the Situation Room from the Time Magazine, I believe, or was it Newsweek, suggested that Hillary Clinton might want to be running for governor of New York. What do you think of that?
You know, I've been hearing that rumor. You know, that's a possibility. I mean, I think that if she, you know, if she pulls back and sort of becomes a little bit more dignified, and sort of sees which side her bread is buttered on, there are a lot of options available for Hillary. I mean, she could run for governor. I mean, she could maybe even have a role, believe it or not, in an Obama administration. I don't know what that would be. It certainly wouldn't be as vice president, as people keep on suggesting. But
you don't see any chance that there's going to be Hillary Obama or the other way around.
No, yeah. I don't think that's in the cards. That's about as likely as like an Alec Baldwin, Kim Basinger ticket. I think that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I did. I mean, I was very amused, you know, a couple of weeks ago when the Clintons were spreading this rumor that, you know, well, you might not have to choose, you know,
because, they'd be unstoppable.
Because the guy who's winning the nomination could be a great vice president. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. But, I do think that, you know, she's at some point she's going to have to decide whether or not, you know, she wants to, you know, have a future as a viable politician as opposed to a pariah. And I think that that's the calculus that hopefully is going to start kicking in.
Yeah. So what about this theory that she's intentionally staying in the race and beating up on Barack Obama because that will damage him so much John McCain will win and then she can run again in 2012?
I believe that. That sounds about right. It could be. You know, one of the things that that a lot of pundits have been saying, and as you're getting the impression, by the way, of just how I spend my days, I'm spending a lot of time toggling between CNN and MSNBC. I think one thing the pundits are saying with really very uncritically is they're saying, you know, in states like Pennsylvania and Indiana, these blue-collar states, Hillary Clinton staying in the race is showing herself to be a real fighter, and people like that, blue-collar people like that she's a fighter, that she's showing that she'll fight for them. And I'm like, wait a minute, she's just showing that she'll fight for her. I mean, let's not confuse staying in the race because you want to get a job at all costs or you want to bring down the party's nominee because then you think you've got a shot at 2012. Let's not confuse that with fighting for health care, because I don't think the two are the same. I think just sort of raw ambition and sort of this populist fighter ethic, I don't think they're the same thing.
Well, what about Hillary Clinton maybe thinks that she has a better chance of beating John McCain, and if Barack Obama's the nominee, we're going to have another four more years of Bush. Couldn't that be her motivation?
You know, she may believe that, but the polls certainly don't suggest that. What's happened as a result of all the negative campaigning over the last couple of weeks, and look, I want to make it very clear, I'm not an apologist for Obama either. I mean, I think that, as I've pointed out, I think that the way he handled the Reverend Wright thing was good, but it was a little bit on the late side. He might have seen that freight train coming a little bit earlier. I think that... if you look at the poll numbers, what happens when you conduct an extremely negative campaign, which the Clintons have done for the last, you know, really ever since it became clear, ever since it became clear that it wasn't just going to be a walkover and she wasn't just going to sort of march right to the coronation, they've conducted a very negative campaign. And what a negative campaign does is it raises the unfavorable ratings of your opponent. But it also raises your own unfavorable ratings. And because Obama was starting at a much better position, he was much more well-liked at the beginning of this race than Hillary was, because Hillary has been in the public eye. She's been a polarizing figure for a lot longer. Her favorability ratings are now very, very low. She is, according to last night, the number I saw was she has a 37% favorable rating. So it's hard to argue that she would be a more formidable opponent for John McCain at this point, because she's inflicted a lot of damage. And I think the Bosnia thing last week really hurt, because it just reminds people, you know, I'm a guy who voted for Bill Clinton twice, and in some ways I thought he was a good president. But I was always bothered by the fact that he could not, sort of say a sentence straight, you know.
And he didn't know the definition of is.
Now, the word is, I think, is one of those, that's one of those words you really got to nail, I think. I think, you know, I understand maybe not knowing what the word inchoate means, but is is one of those vocabulary words you get down right off the bat. I think that it's reminding people, oh, my God, do we really want another 4 years of sort of, you know, snake oil, and I think that really did hurt a lot.
Back to the phones, Karen in Baraboo. Hi, Karen, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to say that I think they both should stay in till the bitter end. It's the first time we've had a woman. This is the first time we had a black American. let's just see how far it goes. If one of them drops out, quits, this we may never, ever get this chance again to have a woman or a black American. I think it's just wonderful. This is the American way. And for them to even have a chance to be where they're at right now, they should just both keep fighting and go to the end. I mean, it's better that she keeps fighting and he keeps fighting than to quit. Nobody likes quitters, no matter what the outcome is. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a question, so I'll take this off the air, but thank you very much.
Nobody likes a quitter.
Andy. Well, you know, I'm getting the impression, you know, it's funny, this is, again, stereotypes, how they're wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, here I am, I'm in New York, and I'm saying, let's stop fighting. Let's get out of the race. Let's stop fighting. We don't like fight. I'm from New York, all right? We're supposed to be so tough, you know, Mean Streets, Scorsese, all that stuff. I'm talking to people in Wisconsin. They're saying, hey, let's, you know, duke it out. Let's just beat each other to a bloody pulp. So so much for the Midwest being all laid back and all that. Man.
Yeah, and well, here's somebody in Salt Lake City, Utah. Let's see what Jim has to say. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Hi. Hey, I was listening to the podcast of the Fox Sunday Morning program.
You've got a lot of time on your hands, dude. That's all I can say. Slow weekend in Salt Lake City.
Well, it's a long commute. but the two things which I thought was interesting is hearing these commenters talk, saying she has every right to stay in the race through all 10 states to the convention. Heck, she can be a third-party candidate for all we're concerned.
I'll bet.
And because what happens is the longer she stays in, the more nervous donors get, and the less, willing they're going to be agreeable to give to Democratic candidates. So it really helps out the Republicans. And then the other comment that they said, which I never realized, but they're now calling the convention the superdelegate primary, and that will decide the convention. That's really the primary that will decide it. And that's really sad when you think about that.
Well, I agree. And it's a really good point. And let's not forget, I mean, I sympathize with people who say, you know, let's stay in the race. And it is historic that we have, you know, two groups represented at this level of a presidential race that we've never seen before. And that's great. And I agree with that. But let's not forget that the people who are really thrilled that Hillary's staying in the race are Rush Limbaugh and his supporters. He's been urging people in all Republicans in all of these primary states to cross over and vote for Hillary. It's a little bit like Sanjaya on American Idol a year ago.
When, you know, like him?
You know, when Howard Stern said, let everybody vote for Sanjaya so we can have the worst American Idol winner ever.
So
the Republicans are thrilled with this. I agree with the earlier caller that there's, you know, if Hillary wants to stay in the race, sort of the way Mike Huckabee stayed in the race, it was clear that he wasn't going to win, but he wanted to, he said, until there's absolutely, you know, I'm mathematically eliminated, I want to stay in the race. However, when Mike Huckabee did that, he didn't spend those last weeks in the race trying to, you know, character assassinate John McCain. He was looking towards his future in the party, the party's success in November. And so he ran a dignified, fairly low-key campaign. If Hillary wants to kind of just stay in the race because she doesn't want to quit and she wants to see, you know, maybe something will blow up with Obama and she'll be the nominee, I would have no problem with that. I have no problem with her doing what she's doing now either, I should add. I'm not calling for her to get out. I do think what she's doing now, though, is good for the Republicans and in the long run, very negative for her, because I think it will hurt her political career. But she's totally entitled to stay in. I don't think anyone should say she doesn't have the right to stay in.
We're talking with Andy Borowitz. He is an online columnist, BorowitzReport.com, author of The Republican Playbook, and winner of the first ever National Press Club Award for Humor. He's talking with us about all things political. Every Monday during this hour, Kathleen Dunn and her guests take a look back at the past week in the world of politics, and we are doing that this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. in for Kathleen Dunn, who is feeling under the weather, but we invite you to join in with your thoughts and questions on all things political for Andy Borowitz. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine in for Kathleen Dunn. Kathleen Dunn will be on tape coming up after 10 o'clock. We pulled an oldie but a goodie out of our archives. She'll be talking with the author of a biography on composer George Gershwin. That's coming up after 10 o'clock. Right now, talking with Andy Borowitz about all things political. And our next caller is James in Amory. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Andy. I just got a quick comment and then a question and get some of your views on my question. My comment is on Reverend Wright. It seems kind of run-of-the-mill, kind of the same old thing where when somebody questions the righteousness of America, it's somewhat of a freight train, or they're dropping the atomic bomb on their political career. And my comment is on that is I think you kind of hit it on the head. America's not totally righteous. You know, we do good things, but I think if people studied, you know, everything that America has done and their political stances around the world, he has a lot of credibility of questioning, you know, these types of things. So I think we have to be careful, you know, becoming too self-righteous, and maybe Reverend Wright is, you know, putting his righteousness in Christ where it should be and not so much on ourselves. That's my comment. My question to you has to do with the future of the federal politics and where the presidential stances are on the Security and Prosperity Partnership. Are you familiar with what that is?
I'm not. That sounds interesting. I mean, I'm in favor of both security and prosperity.
Well,
where's the catch?
Let me just quick show. The Security and Prosperity Partnership is kind of an undercover. It's not even. It doesn't have anything to do with elected representatives or anything, but what they're doing is they're harmonizing all the laws and stuff like that between Canada, America, and Mexico. And you can go on spp.gov and look, and they have a whole working groups of harmonizing all these things. And I realize, you know, under our Constitution,
this is sort of the North American Union thing?
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah. We have elected representatives that sit on oversight committees, our congressmen and our senators and whatnot, and they sit on oversight committees, and they deal with issues of security, economics, of commerce, energy, these types of things. But there's an underground group working under the heads of each three countries, and they're rewriting the laws, harmonizing them. And that's the conspiracy. People will say, well, this is the coming North American Union, you know. And my question is, it's quite a big thing, but it's nowhere in the media, and a lot of media people are pretty ignorant of it. But my question is, I don't think that that's going anywhere. I think that's going to be full steam ahead, and you don't see any of these people running who are congressmen and senators and should have some oversight in this type of stuff. You don't even see them saying one word about it. So I'm thinking they're all on board for it, and it's totally stealthy, and they're not even mentioning it.
So what do you make of all this, Andy?
Well, it's the first I've heard of it, but I've got to say, on the face of it, the idea of having some kind of a merger, at least with Canada, sounds good to me because their dollar is stronger than ours. So I think, you know, I think that would be awesome. Plus, they have, like, lots of really good prescription medications that I can't afford in this country. So let's not get too critical of this whole security prosperity deal. It
right.
could work out well for us.
We can look into that. Roy in Aaron County. Hi, Roy.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm an 86-year-old WW2 veteran, and it kind of dismays me to have a man that's running for president that refuses to wear the American flag on his lapel.
Yeah, what makes you say he refuses to do that, Roy?
Well, it was said by him that he has something about America that he will not wear that flag.
Yeah, so you don't like Barack Obama because you heard he said that?
And then the other thing is he voted against the flag amendment, which would have made it a federal offense to destroy or destroy the flag.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's very very American where I come from.
So who are you going to vote for, Roy?
Well, right now I'm still undecided, but I wish the women get their way just this once.
just this once. So, hey, what about Barack Obama and his flag lapel pin thing? And will this be hurting Barack Obama? Should he be the nominee, Andy?
I really am not. I don't think we should be deciding who's going to be the nominee based on what they're wearing. Because I got to tell you, some of those outfits Hillary's been wearing also are just, well, like that yellow pantsuit, that's got to go. But, you know, I have total respect for that gentleman who called his 86 and defended our country. Mm-hmm. But I really think in this, maybe I'm naive, but I really think there's a difference between being patriotic about our country and just displaying the flag. It's so easy to wear a lapel pin. That means nothing to me. I mean, I got to be honest with you. After 9/11, we had all these outbursts of patriotism, and suddenly, I don't know if you remember, at least in New York, on pizza boxes, suddenly there were flags that hadn't been there before. We had the most patriotic pizza boxes ever. I think I've got to say, it can be a meaningful gesture if somebody really means it. It can be a totally hollow political gesture if somebody doesn't mean it. I'm more concerned about how patriotic is this person's positions. How much does he care about our country, he or she? And so whether they wear a flag, whether they... Unfortunately, the whole flag-burning thing, it's unfortunately protected under the Constitution. You would have to have a constitutional amendment, which the Clintons were also opposed to. It's generally speaking, if we start regulating political speech or political protest, that's kind of why we fought the British to begin with. So I would never burn a flag or think it was cool to burn a flag. But there are a lot of things I don't think are cool or I wouldn't do that I think I still should have the right to do. So I understand. That sounds like a very patriotic gentleman, and I'm sure he is, but I think we have to be careful about when we get into this contest of who's more patriotic than somebody else. That makes me a little queasy. That sounds like returning to a time in the 1950s I don't want to go back to.
All right. Thanks, Roy. Next, we go to Bill in Orfordville. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi there. Just a couple of quickies. I'll take my answers off the air. What happened to the women's support for Hillary? Where do the old white guys fit into as a category for Obama? I mean, I can't imagine that the boomers are they want to see this man do something. So I just take my questions off the air.
All right. Why have women deserted, or have they deserted Hillary Clinton, Andy?
I don't think they've all deserted her. I think that she's still got some support. I think sort of white, blue-collar women, working women in, you know, states like Pennsylvania and Indiana are probably going to come out and vote for her. But I do think that she's suffered some attrition. I wasn't sure about the second half of that question.
I think he meant older white guys. Are they really going to vote for Barack Obama if
or
he's
are
the
they
nominee?
Well, there is an older white guy in the race, which is John McCain.
Yeah.
So I guess if we're all just going to vote for somebody who looks like us, mm-hmm. it'll be very easy to game this race. I want to make it very clear: there are no 50-year-old Jewish guys running for president, and so I really have no one to vote for at all. I'm just absolutely bereft. I'm actually going to maybe have to vote for somebody who's not in my exact gender, ethnic category, and that is really troubling to me.
What do you make of these polls that say, for instance, Clinton supporters say if Barack Obama gets the nomination, 28% of them would vote for McCain, and on the other hand, almost 19 or 20% of Obama supporters say they'd vote for McCain if Hillary Clinton gets the nomination. Do you think they really would?
No. I think there'll be some bad feelings, and I think that some people may just not vote if the negative campaign continues the way it is, and the candidates just go tooth and claw with each other for months until the convention, as some of your lovely Wisconsin
we love a fight here.
You love a fight, as that lovely lady who called and said, "Why don't they just fight forever?" I think if they just keep attacking each other, yeah, there'll be some bad feelings. That'll depress the Democratic vote. But it's probably going to be offset by the fact that the race, as contentious as it is, has attracted so many new voters to the party. I mean, incredible numbers of new Democrats have signed up. And that's actually a troubling development for the Republicans. So in the end, I'm not terribly concerned about it. You know, you're finally in a voting booth, and you have to decide what you want for the next 4 years. And I don't think at that point sort of bad feelings don't, I mean, it's sometimes they come to the fore, but I like to think that sometimes our better nature does too. And people say, well, do I really want another 100 years, for example, of this Iraq war, which is going so well? So I don't know. I mean, you know, you have another option too, which is Mike Gravel is now running.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be run as an independent, right?
Absolutely. He's going to run as a Libertarian.
Oh, yeah, a Libertarian.
And,
yeah.
And Nader is urging him to get out of the race. He's just making a fool of himself.
This is a piece that I just read about on your website. I didn't know this, that Hillary Clinton, who's been accused of padding her foreign policy resume, now is saying that she misspoke about wrestling Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, this was, again, I think she was in a town hall meeting, and she said that in 1998 she tracked him down to his cave and was wrestling with him, and he somehow eluded her. But she now says she remembered it incorrectly. It turns out she was, on that day, she was actually in Orlando greeting honor roll students at Disney World. So she speaks not millions, but zillions of words a week. And if you speak that much, you know how it is, Joy. You're doing You're doing drive time radio. Every now and then you might say it's going to be mild this afternoon when in fact it's going to be rainy.
Yeah, I've been known to say that.
You've been known to say that. And, you know, if I were doing a negative campaign about you, I would be bringing that up right now.
Yeah, well, it's a busy time for her and all of us.
It is.
Sarah in Pell Lake. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. And just quickly, I have to say that I'd like to see her step down because I think it's better for the Democratic Party instead of punching. I think it's better that we do that. But I wanted to mention there's something about Barack Obama that no one has heard about because it just he never said it. But he was at the NIU Convocation Center when they had, in middle February, when they had the thing for the students that had died in the shooting. And he came off the campaign trail. He snuck in. So it wasn't a media circus. So he snuck in to the thing. He sat there, listened, was the only one who didn't speak, and then greeted the parents and the friends of the students who had died afterwards. And he knew that if he had said something, he would have been a media circus. And our president has taken things like that and turned it into a political speech. And he didn't. And I thought that just spoke volumes of his character to come off of it was in the middle of February, so it's right in the middle of everything, and I thought that just spoke volumes for him.
Thanks, Sarah. Did you hear about that, Andy?
I didn't, and I mean, I think you know, I think that's very impressive. I mean, it's hard, you know, in this environment, it's hard to do anything without trying to get credit for it because sort of you know every vote counts and everything like that. But you know, again, I think that he has run, you know, for the most part, a dignified campaign, and it's going to be interesting to see if he winds up getting the nomination and if he winds up becoming president. I think it'll be interesting to see whether you can still, in this environment, in this day and age, still be elected president without really resorting to opportunism at every step of the way. I'm not saying he never does because he's, you know, he's a politician. Let's not be too naive about it. But I think on the whole, just everything is relative, and in this environment, he's carried himself very impressively, I think.
Dan in La Crosse. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think that that he should have defended Reverend Wright, because Reverend Wright hasn't said anything that's really controversial. I mean, he said the U.S. Has a history of racism. Yeah. The foreign policy of the U.S. has been belligerent towards the rest of the world, yeah, overthrowing governments and so forth. And I'm glad that Samantha Power dropped out, because she would have advised him wrongly. I mean, Samantha Power was heard on Democracy Now! Saying that, Chavez is a dictator, you know, and you know, he's troubling, and, you know, in Venezuela. And I think that Samantha Power doesn't know what she's talking about.
All right. What about Samantha Power? She called Hillary Clinton a monster and said other things that caused the Obama campaign to tell her to resign.
That's right. You know, that comment about Hillary Clinton was very offensive to monsters. Monsters were, and they were alienating. Monsters have been a key Democratic voting bloc for decades.
Let me get someone on to defend Hillary Clinton. Clarence in Whitewater. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what I'm doing. I want to defend him because he's not defending her. And she worked hard, and I think she deserves to be able to become president, and I think she'd make a good president. So,
All right. Well, you know, and a lot of people agree with you. I think I was actually, you know, a believer earlier in this process that we had two very, very strong candidates. But I think that the turn that the campaign has taken has hurt them both. Her more than him.
Yeah. So, in our final minute, less than a minute, how's this going to resolve itself, Andy?
Well, since it's Democrats, we can all be assured of this: it will end badly. It will end badly. I don't know. I think there's one possible scenario that could. It's a very, very long shot. But I've been hearing this rumor. And I don't want to, I guess I can go public with it now.
Just whisper a little bit of it to us because we're almost out of time.
Monica Lewinsky is going to run for president. She is going to offer herself as an alternative to Hillary, saying it worked before.
Well, write more about this on your website, and we'll take a look at that. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
Yeah, Andy Borowitz is an online columnist. You can read more of his writings, borowitzreport.com. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.